And the client who buys from you today, because you're 5% less than someone else, they're going to leave to go to someone else a year from now because someone else is 5% less than you. The person who feels that you deliver extraordinary value today is going to have a hard time leaving just to save money in the future.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Welcome, fellow law entrepreneurs, to episode number 24 with my good friend, Ian Altman. Ian is a best-selling author, strategic advisor, and internationally sought speaker on integrity-based sales and business development. He's written two best-selling books available on Amazon. The first one, Upside Down Selling, was a smash hit and a very easy read, as he points out, lots of pictures and something that you can read in 30 minutes. So that's a easily doable action item. And his second book, similarly acclaimed, was called, or is called, Same Side Selling. Ian currently writes for Forbes Magazine and Inc. On their digital platforms, and is the host of the Grow My Revenue Business Cast, which is available on iTunes, and is one of my go-to weekly podcasts that I listen to. So without further ado, here's my friend, Ian Altman. Ian Altman, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, it's a pleasure to be here, and that's something I don't always say when I'm talking to lawyers.
Well, you're not alone in that regard. Thanks for taking the time to be here with me today, Ian. Ian, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and how you got to be where you are.
So today, most people know me as I'm a weekly columnist in the digital editions for both Forbes and Inc. magazines, writing about sales, leadership, and innovation. I've written a couple of best-selling books. The first one was called Upside Down Selling. I believe that one was so popular because it targeted non-salespeople. It was in color, had pictures in it, and you could read it in less than 30 minutes. So if you know your audience, that's like right in the sweet spot. And the most recent book I wrote is called Same Side Selling. And that's a book I co-wrote with a guy named Jack Quarles. And Jack spent the last two decades in the purchasing and procurement side of the world. And so he's one of those guys, and often procuring, among other things, legal services. And this book is all about the adversarial traps that buyers and sellers find themselves in. And we talk about a lot of the science and kind of how buyers are wired and how to align the way we present ourselves with the way that people buy. And of course, there's a lot of business stuff before then that I'm happy to share if you think it's important.
Well, yeah, why don't you interject that as we go along, sure, if we're relevant. You know, a lot of attorneys come to me, well, not just to me, but a lot of attorneys hold the opinion that they're not salesmen. They don't want to be thought of as being too sales-oriented. I think the paradigm is changing in the legal practice. Do you have any views on that?
Yeah, I mean, by the way, nobody wants to be on the receiving end of your stereotypical traditional salesperson. So in that respect, attorneys are absolutely 100% right when they say that to you. However, any attorney who talks to a client and that client says, or talks to a potential client, the potential client says, wow, okay, yes, I want you to represent me and now I'm going to pay you for your services. You just sold something. So you can call it what you want, but ultimately it has to do with you sold your services to someone who's paying for them. And of course, we want to attract people and navigate a sales process that helps people focus more on value than price. And old school sales techniques just won't do that.
Yeah, and I think there's also a dichotomy in the practice of law as well. I know I've been transitioning my practice from a litigation practice to one of estates and trust in estates. And when I was a litigator, there was always an external event driving the client to the law office.
Absolutely.
Whether it be a car accident or a disruption of their marital life or custodial issues or being sued by their business being sued. But in more, the more transactional-oriented legal practices, such as trust and estates and elder law, there's not that external event. And so the paradigm is different. So I have to be a little more concerned about sales.
Well, you know what? You do. And what I also tell you is this, is that one of the things you have to think about is that if there's someone in the audience, I'm sure there's a bunch of people like this who are practicing some sort of corporate law. Well, if you're doing some sort of corporate law, there's a pretty good chance that your potential client with whom you would like to work already has a relationship with somebody else. So what we need to start recognizing is, how do we dial in to the motivations of those people and why they would change from one provider to another one? And that's a whole different dynamic that a lot of people don't consider, which is, look, the people, your potential client is working with somebody right now who they feel does a pretty good job already. So why do they need somebody else?
Yeah. And I think what one of the traps that attorneys fall into when addressing that issue is to come at it from a position of, look how great my practice is. Look how great my law firm is. Look how great I am. And hope that carries the day in terms of convincing the potential client that they're worth transitioning to or hiring in the first place. And if I'm reading you correctly, that's not the premise of upside down selling or same side selling.
No, you know what? It's not, but it's funny because I often use law firms as the perfect case study of a marketing that that time has forgotten, because law firms will often represent that they are, you go to their website and it's, we're a full service law firm, which I always think is funny because it's not like you're competing against partial service law firms.
Right.
And so if you took out the name of your firm and then took the language of 10 law firms and compared them to one another, my guess is you wouldn't be able to tell which one is yours, which one is someone else's. That doesn't work effectively. So what we need to start thinking about more is, what are the problems that we're really good at solving that other people aren't? So instead of having a focus of breadth, you instead have a focus of depth. So you start thinking about, where's the level of expertise that we have? So instead of saying, oh, we can do everything, you might say, you could be an attorney at a practice with hundreds of attorneys. And still you say, well, my clients come to me because of, and then you list the types of problems that you're good at solving. Now, I've got partners in other practice areas that solve other issues, but this is why people come to me. That's a much more powerful conversation, because the people experiencing those sorts of problems, you're going to have their attention. So for example, if someone comes to you, you could say, oh, I provide services around elder law and estates and people who feel they need that service already perceive you as a commodity. But instead, if you said, people often come to me because their parents are getting older, they might be getting older, and they're concerned with how their aging or their eventual departure from this planet might impact financially their heirs, their spouse, their children and grandchildren, and now they want to make sure the government doesn't end up with all their resources.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of a tagline that I use quite often is, when people ask me what I do, I say, well, I help families keep their money in the family instead of going to the government.
That's perfect.
And I think people, it sort of focuses on that age-old question, is what are potential clients drawn more to? Are they drawn more towards seeking pleasure or avoiding pain? And as I ask that question more and more of people with sales experience, such as yourself, the answer seems to be more often, they want to avoid pain. That issue resonates with them more often than, this would be a good thing for you to do because you'll feel happy when it's done.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is this, is that the notion of someone experiencing pain or anxiety is often the flip side of something that is aspirational. So, for example, someone could be concerned that man, God forbid something happens to me and my wife, what happens to our children? Now, the flip side of that coin on the aspirational side is, well, I just want to know that if something happens to me that my kids are okay. Well, which one's more powerful? Well, the negative, unfortunately, is more powerful because it conveys a certain sense of urgency that the aspirational side doesn't. So though you may get clients who are focused on the aspirational side, they tend to make decisions faster when either they personally or they know someone who's experienced something that didn't work out well. You know, my dad's 88. We just had, you know, a whole bunch of jumping through hoops because he had some health issues. We're moving him to assisted living. And someone said to me, they said, oh man, I mean, that must've been really tough. And I said, well, actually, you know what? When he all of a sudden wasn't conscious, we had a medical directive. We had already talked about this stuff. We had everything documented. So that part was easy. It was all the other decisions that we had to make as the children that were difficult. But the people who don't have that, now, when I explain it to someone else, they're like, man, I don't think I have that for my father or mother or whatever. And now it creates urgency because they just almost experienced it through somebody else.
Yeah, and they feel it. They have a gut reaction to that story.
And Neil, here's an important distinction though. So if you said to somebody, well, I mean, if this happens to your parents, then, you know, how are you going to deal with XYZ? Your potential client's going to get defensive. So instead, how can you present it in a way so they're not going to feel defensive? And the way you do it is you say, wow, you know, I had a client recently who had this happen. So you use what I call a third-party story. I had a client who had this happen. And thankfully, they had all these things in place so that everything was documented. They had a durable power of attorney. They had, you know, all the documentation they needed in this circumstance to make sure that his financial stuff was taken care of, that they could care for him medically and everything. And man, I just thought to myself how horrible I would have felt if I had not helped these people get that in place, all the turmoil they would have been going through.
Is this an example of what you mean by same side selling?
Well, so same side selling is the premise is that you're focused on finding the fit to see where you can have the greatest impact for your client. So, and the idea of same-side selling is that all you're really trying to do is figure out if your potential client might have a need for something that you're really good at solving. So if they have a challenge that you're really good at solving, that's fantastic. Now, sometimes they're not going to be aware of those challenges. And the way we help them become aware of those is through something we write about in same-side selling called the same-side pitch, which follows the model of entice, disarm, and discover.
Can you tease that out a little bit?
Sure. So the idea of entice, disarm, discover is this, is first, we entice by sharing challenges or problems that we solve with extraordinary results. We then disarm the notion that we're there to sell something by acknowledging that not everyone's the right fit for us. And then we trigger a discovery phase to learn more about their situation to see whether or not we can help. So it sounds something like this. So if your ideal client, we'll use you as an example. If your ideal client on the estate side is someone who says, man, you know what? I've worked really hard and built up some wealth, and I'm concerned that in the fullness of time that the government's going to get more of my assets than my family members, and I'm just not sure how to protect it in the most tax advantageous way. So that might be similar to what somebody would say, right?
Sure, okay? Absolutely.
So when I use that, what we call rant, and my buddy Bob London coined this term, the elevator rant, so I borrow it every time I can, the elevator rant being what your client would complain about, then I feed that into the same side pitch, and it would sound something like this. So you would say, you know, people come to me, typically entrepreneurs or business people who have been successful in their businesses, they've amassed some wealth, and they start looking forward and they say, man, in the fullness of time, I want to make sure that my assets are actually protected and end up in my children's or whoever's hands I want them to, not in the government's hands. And I want them to be directed the way I think they should be, not arbitrarily. So that's kind of the beginning of the entice part. Then it's for the right individuals, they tell us that we deliver pure clarity to that, give them 100% comfort that they know exactly how well their assets are protected. So they're not going to be just dealt with haphazardly. However, the way we approach that isn't the right fit for everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's the disarm part. So I don't yet know whether or not we can help you, but if addressing that's important, then I'm happy to learn more to see whether or not we can help. So the interesting part of that is that by following that model, you're actually having the humility to say, not everyone's the right fit for me. And by the way, it's not some Jedi mind trick, because let's face it, you're going to have clients who say, you know what, I'm just looking for something that's cookie cutter. I don't want something that's tailored to me. Well, they're not a good client for you. You might get someone who says, well, you know what, you know, I don't want to do it thoroughly. I just kind of want to do like a partial, like, you know, take a template and make a couple minor edits and fill out a form, and that's good enough for me. You know what, that's fine, but those aren't your clients.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, so not everybody in our audience is an estate planner or a trusted estates attorney.
Yep.
If an attorney is sitting here listening to this podcast and they're thinking, you know, I'm not doing a good job of closing the consultation.
Yep.
I invite people in. I have a consultation with them. Some attorneys charge. Some do it for free. Some consultations take a half hour, some take an hour. Some people go really overboard and,
sure,
and spend a lot more time. Where should these folks start to look to improve their conversions?
Well, there's a couple of things. So let's take a general business attorney. So it's a general business attorney. Now you're talking to maybe you're talking to an in-house counsel who's looking for outside counsel. Maybe you're looking for someone who's looking to handle different disputes for their organization. Maybe you're someone who's selling labor and employment law services.
Or we've had a couple of attorneys who work in a vertical market. One, you know, addresses the needs of restaurateurs. One addresses the needs of microbrewers, that kind
of thing. Perfect. So entrepreneurs, microbrewers, whatever it happens to be, presumably, is it fair to say that most often these people are talking to someone who may already have either an existing relationship or existing experience with some other attorney?
Probably, I would think at least some, if not the majority.
Okay. Have. So one of the easiest things you can do is you can actually ask some questions about their existing experience, and you can do it in a way that actually makes the people more comfortable rather than less comfortable. So usually, what will happen is someone says, "Oh, you're dealing with such and such a law firm. Oh, I bet they're overcharging you." And the person asking the questions kind of starts dumping on the competition, which I will tell you can never do. But instead, what you could say is, oh, you've been dealing with XYZ. You know, we always like to get the sense of what other people are doing that maybe we should emulate. Could you tell me some of the things that you like about them?
Oh, that's brilliant.
Okay. And now they're going to give you a list of the things they like. And don't just take one or two things. Keep pressing. Hey, you've been working with them for a while. There must be more than that, right? And after you get a bunch of information that way, then you say, well, so if you could change one or two things about them, what would those be? Now, how you ask that question is really critical, because if you said, what don't you like about them, they're going to get defensive because they picked those people. But instead, if you said, if you could change one or two things, what would those be? Well, now they're going to say, well, you know, I mean, the people we're dealing with are good, but they don't really understand restaurants that well. Okay. And how has that become a problem for you? Is it just kind of, you know, you think it might be an issue, but it's really not that big of a deal? Well, no, because we had this one matter and these guys didn't really understand, you know, the different employment issues that we have. And next thing you know, we get caught with something. Oh, okay. And now your specialist gets to say, I get that. So is the potential of having a firm that had that expertise, so you didn't have that uncertainty, worth a discussion about how we might be able to help?
I like that for two reasons. I mean, I think it's brilliant to ask them, what are the good things that the competition is doing? Because you're getting feedback and you can do that self-analysis. Am I doing those things? And then after that, the way you phrased it, if you could change something about how the other firm is addressing your needs, what would that be? That tells you what their pain point is.
And here's the other funny part of it. And this is the trap that a lot of people fall into. You need to recognize that not every opportunity is a good fit for you. And that's one of the fundamental principles in same-side selling, is that more than half the people you meet are not a fit for you. And so if you ask somebody, what do you like? And they list out 20 things they like, and you say, well, if you could change one or two things, what would those be? And they sit there and go, I don't know if I'd change anything. I mean, these guys are amazing. They like read our minds, and we never feel like we're being overbilled. Now you might fish for it based on, let's say, your expertise. You say, well, some clients tell us that sometimes their attorneys have a lot of breadth of knowledge, but don't have the depth of knowledge, let's say, in their field of hospitality or their field of restaurants. How common do you think that is? And the client's either going to say, oh man, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That's a problem we're having. Or they're going to say, yeah, I don't know. We don't have that problem. At that point, what you've just confirmed is that they're in good hands and they're not likely to leave anytime soon.
Right.
So just, and if you keep pushing at that point, you're going to become a pariah they never want to talk to again. If you say, look, it sounds like you're in great hands. And when our clients feel like that, we know they're not going anywhere else. And that, you know, we actually feel good when someone else is in good hands. So if it's okay with you, how about I follow up with you in 4 months, 6 months, we'll stay in touch. If there's something new we're offering that I think you might find valuable, I'll let you know. If something comes up that you're not being served well, let us know. But in the meantime, it sounds like you're in good hands. And that way you don't depart as someone who's scorned. It's you actually have a pretty good relationship with someone who's just not a fit right now.
And it's just, I mean, I think it's a little bit of just good manners. You part as, good friends and there'll be another day.
Yeah, it's the notion that not everyone's a good fit. There's a metaphor we use in same-side selling of a puzzle. And the idea is that in same-side selling, you want to think that you and your potential client are metaphorically putting a puzzle together. So if you have a little pouch that has a bunch of puzzle pieces, if you encounter someone else, but they have totally different puzzle pieces, I don't care how great your puzzle pieces are, they're not going to fit.
Yeah.
And when you find the people that have a good fit, it's like so easy to put everything together. And in the end, it creates this picture that neither one of you could have created on your own. And that's the metaphor that people have to come up with, because then you're never trying to sell. You're just trying to find out who you can solve this challenge for with your missing pieces.
You know, the visual image I get from the title, Same Side Selling, is that both you and your potential client are sitting on the same side of the table, as opposed to the opposite side of the table in like an arm wrestling position.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's not adversarial, it's cooperative. The idea is that all the things that drive us nuts, we solve together. So for example, you might be selling into a corporation where there's a lot of bureaucracy and the purchasing and procurement people are always going to try and beat up people to negotiate price. And so you could either wait for that to happen, or you could say to your potential client, look, sometimes what happens is we build this great relationship with somebody who really trusts that we're going to give them great advice. And then procurement comes in and they kind of see anybody who provides these services as a commodity. And they don't necessarily value the additional intangibles. How should you and I deal with that if that happens in our situation?
Yeah, so you're helping them head off the problem.
Yeah, and then the client says, oh, I'll talk to purchasing. Well, by doing it that way, it gets handled up front, or what we call pre-solving or pre-selling the objection. If you wait to the end, then you're in a death match with some guy who thinks their job is to see if they can save 3%, even if it means they don't get the proper representation.
And attorneys fall into this trap all the time. I know I'm a perfect example of this. I mean, I had somebody tell me one time that the greatest skill you can learn is which clients not to take.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're going to compete on price, everybody's racing to the bottom, and you'll never be successful.
Yeah, my buddy Seth Godin says, if you're competing on price, it's a race to the bottom, and the bad news is you might win.
Yeah,
and so, exactly. So that's the challenge with it. And the client who buys from you today, because you're 5% less than someone else, they're going to leave to go to someone else a year from now because someone else is 5% less than you. The person who feels that you deliver extraordinary value today is going to have a hard time leaving just to save money in the future.
Do you, Ian, see that the landscape for sales in professional services is changing as a result of technology in any way?
It is, because there are different ways now that you can connect with people and stay engaged. There's also a ton of information that the customer or buyer can get without ever having to interact with a human being. And so what has changed is, if you know, a lot of law firms especially are reluctant to produce content. So they say, well, you know, I can't address questions on my website, and they'll give you 27 reasons
yeah.
why they can't do it. And the reality is that if your customer or a potential client is not getting information from you, then rest assured they're getting it from somebody else. And you can imagine that if, let's say, somebody needed a particular type of legal help, and if the first five times they did a Google search, they're pointed information that you created, then before they ever call you, they're more comfortable with you than they are with somebody else. So that dynamic has changed. Also, the idea is that if a client has some sort of successful outcome with you, then they'll probably tell some of their friends. And if they have an unsuccessful outcome, they'll tell people they've never even met before. So it's critical that we focus on results. Now, obviously, in some legal matters, look, the reason why there's a dispute is because each side believes that they're right, and you may not reach, you know, a good outcome, if you will. So in other words, it might be that you lost not as badly as you thought you could have.
Yeah, I always tell people that mediation is the Greek word for everybody loses a little bit.
Yeah, I love it. But I mean, so the idea is that we want to make sure that with our clients, we know what success looks like before we start. And literally to say to a client, so how would we know if we're successful? And the client says, well, we'd win this case. Well, you know what? I'd love to say we can win the case. I don't yet know. But if we didn't win the case, it'd probably mean because our case wasn't winnable, right? Yeah, okay. So really what you want to make sure of is that we have our eyes wide open up front. We know what the risks are and that we're all on the same page, right? Yeah, okay. So how are we gonna know if that's the case? How about if I check in with you once a month and just ask you, hey, do you feel like, you know, we got everything in front of us? And then all of a sudden, if the client loses, they go, yeah, but you know what? We probably shouldn't have won anyhow. And it's all about expectation management.
You know, I'm interested to hear you mention content marketing. For a lot of reasons, attorneys in particular are frequently hesitant to generate a blog or write informatively on their website, unless it's reviewing a specific change in a statute or case law. And it seems to me that they're writing for other attorneys as opposed to writing for potential clients. Do you see that as an issue?
Well, for a referral source, I think it's fine to write for those other attorneys. The reality that I see is that what a lot of attorneys feel is, well, but there isn't a clear black and white answer to this, and I can't provide legal advice. Great. So every attorney who's listened to this knows what disclaimer they have to write on that page that makes it so it's not legal advice. Okay. It's not like you have to go hire an accountant or a physician to do that. You're already attorneys. You know how to protect yourself that way. Right. So that part, you know, that excuse goes out the window. Then it's a matter of, so for example, gee, what do you do if an employee is threatening to sue the company? Well, there are three or four things that you should probably consider. And depending on your situation, these may or may not apply to you, but here are some things you may want to think about. And then go through the three or four most likely scenarios. And guess what? Someone's going to read it and go, man, but I don't know which scenario we're in. We should call somebody. Oh, you know what? I'm probably most comfortable with the people who just wrote this article.
Why don't we call them to start?
Yeah, why don't I start there? And so that's the misconception is like, well, but I can't give a definitive answer. It's okay. I mean, you know, it's and for everyone who says, oh, well, you know, we have no idea how to create content. Well, just think about any questions that your clients ask, or when you're talking to potential clients, what kind of questions or issues come up, and then speak about them generically. And don't say, hey, there's a definitive one answer to this. Here are different ways that this might be solved.
Yeah, that's a great way for generating content. You know, ask, you know, what are the questions that you have, and then expound on the questions that potential clients bring to you.
Exactly.
Well, Ian, we're bumping up against our time limit here. I probably could spend another couple of hours talking about sales. Let's just educate our audience a little bit about your website, your business, and what you have to offer, and how attorneys or other small business owners might be able to reach out to you.
You know, I appreciate it. The easiest way to find me is on Twitter, as well as my website, which is ianaltman.com. So it's ianaltman.com. You can also certainly read my articles every week in Inc. Magazine and Forbes online. And really, if there's topics that your audience says, man, I'd love to hear about this, just all I have to do is fire me a note. that says, hey, can you write about this? And there's a pretty good chance that in the coming weeks, that's what I'll cover, as well as the topics on my podcast. You know, a lot of times law firms and other professional services companies will come to me because it's, look, we've got all these people who are masterfully trained in their craft of practicing law, but they don't understand what type of information they should be collecting in the context of a sales opportunity or how to convert somebody from interested to a potential client. And so oftentimes I'll do workshops at either partner retreats or for associates to kind of build their skills and their comfort so they know how to behave in those situations to get better results.
And that's exactly the reason for being for this podcast, is because attorneys get that great education in the law in law school, but they don't get an education in how to run a business and how to secure and attract, you know, clients. So that's why I think service like yours would be invaluable for everybody. Now, you made passing reference to your own podcast. Why don't you spill the beans? Where can our listeners hear you?
Well, it's called the Grow My Revenue Business Cast. There's a new episode every week. You can get to it on Stitcher and iTunes. And I'm fortunate that I have some really talented guests on my program, people who thankfully are way smarter than I am. So if you hang out with smart people, it makes you look smarter. So that's my goal in life, is hang out with enough of those smart people and we'll create some good value. And it's all about selling, innovation, and leadership.
And that's Grow My Revenue?
It's the Grow My Revenue Business Cast, yep.
Business Cast, okay. Well, I listened to it. I didn't remember that it was called the Business Cast, but yeah. I knew it was called Grow My Revenue. I listened to it. I highly recommend it for anybody here who wants to further their understanding of, you know, good techniques for converting, as you said, potential clients into actual real clients. So, Ian, thanks ever so much for being with us today, and we'll catch you further on down the road.
Neil, it was a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening and being a part of today's program. The utmost compliment you could pay me is to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a strong 5-star review if you think the podcast and what we're trying to do here is worthwhile. Feel free to share the link to the podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. I would be very appreciative if you did. So until next time, thanks again for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.